Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, April 13th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So I don't know if you know, but this is the 40th episode of Wiretaps. So we've been at this, I think, every single week for 40 weeks now. I don't think we missed any, as far as I can recall. So congratulations. Kind of a nice anniversary.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah.
Good milestone. On that note, I know that the podcast has a really high rating. I think it's a 5-star rating, and we have so many glowing reviews, but I'm going to be... A bit pushy, and just ask if you do listen to this podcast, please rate and review us over on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. It really does help, and we're definitely interested in making sure that like next year's candidates catch wind of this, because we've just heard from so many people that it's been a useful podcast to tune into as they kind of figure out their application strategy. So there you have it, 40 episodes in the books for Wiretaps, and I don't even know what number we're at overall, because we do a lot of other episodes where we interview admissions directors and things. But it's been a great run so far. What's new this week, Alex? I know there's been a lot happening with respect to round 3 or round 4 in some cases, deadlines. Do you want to give a quick overview of what's going on?
We're in the midst of sort of final round deadlines or officially stated deadlines. But as we know, given the current pandemic and the crisis that we're all experiencing, that a lot of schools are either being more flexible about the deadline or literally pushing back the deadlines or just being extremely flexible. So upcoming this week would have been both Marshall and Anderson out on the West Coast had deadlines scheduled for this week, but one of them they pushed it back to May 1st and the other to June 1st. So if you're in sunny Southern California, you've got a little bit more time to prepare your candidacy, or at least I should say if you're considering being in sunny Southern California for your, for your MBA. But yeah, I mean, we're basically round two is done and in the, you know, done and dusted in terms of decisions are out. We've got a lot of activity on Decision Wire, actually, as people sort of debate their choices. Some really interesting conversation, Graham. You know, people sort of, you know, weighing up scholarship offers, weighing up, you know, the nuances of their particular career goals and which schools are best for that and so forth. And obviously one of the candidates we're going to highlight today on Wiretaps is one of those undecided folks on Decision Wire.
Yeah, so a lot going on. One of the things I was going to say is that, you know, in most cases, schools with a round three or a late deadline are saying you could still apply by the deadline, but we're also going to accept applications on a rolling basis until June or even in some cases July. I mean, it really depends on the school. So check our COVID-19 updates page where we've got all this stuff in a grid. Pretty easy to navigate, and you can find out what's happening, and also just go to the school's web pages as well for updates. But it is interesting in that they want people to apply and get it in on time if they can, so that they can keep with their decision schedule. But it's still, you know, they're also, as you said, increasingly flexible. The other thing that I've been a little surprised by is there are a number of schools now doing GMAT waivers. So, you know, initially schools were saying, look, if you haven't taken the test, apply, take the test at some point in the coming months when the test, you know, is back and available, or when you can do it online, because the GMAT test is not yet available online, but will be, I believe, later this month. So they've been flexible. But now I've seen, I want to say UNC, University of Maryland, and maybe Darden have all said, well, you know, if you can give us something else, like an SAT, or in some cases, if you just have enough of an academic background that we're, you know, that can make the school feel comfortable, they won't require you to take the test, which I'm pretty shocked by. But obviously, these are unprecedented kind of waters that we're navigating. But that is something that I've seen, and I don't know where that will end or what that'll mean for the long term. But yeah, so some GMAT and testing in general waivers seem to be available. And the last thing I wanted to mention that we're trying to track on our COVID-19 updates page as well is just that schools are extending or delaying, I guess, the start date in some cases for preterm or even just for the first classes. So we've seen, I think Duke has announced that, and there have been others. So stay tuned, because for better or for worse, I believe UNC also just announced they're going to push their preterm back by a month or something. So it's definitely, this could have an impact on when school starts for a lot of candidates.
Yeah, there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, Graham, which is, very understandable given the nature of the virus and so on and so forth. We just don't know what things are going to be looking like in the fall at this point.
Yeah, and to that, I did want to thank everyone that took place. We were running a second COVID-19 survey that was a deep dive for admitted candidates to really share their concerns about like what they're worried about. And we're going to get all that information together and out to the applicant pool via clearadmit.com as soon as possible. But I really want to just personally thank, everyone that has taken part in the survey and provided us with such great feedback, which we're also sharing with schools to help them kind of adjust and make sure that they're, serving applicants in the best way possible. So let's dive into the wiretap stuff, Alex. I did want to mention you are now, you not only is this our 40th wiretaps episode, but you also hit another milestone. You're over 300 in the kind of likes category. So people are liking the content that you're sharing. I crossed the 100 threshold. I'm at like 130 something right now. And we have Elliot, the other co-founder of ClearAdmit, who's been also sharing insights on DecisionWire, and he's racking up some likes. So lots of activity on the site, which is fun to see.
Yeah, but I'm not sure you're number two on the site, Graham. I think the one of our community members might have more likes than you, which is fantastic, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that's great, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, frankly, the advice that I'm seeing coming from members of the community and some of the data they're sharing to help people make decisions about where to attend and
Yeah.
that sort of thing is just, it's gold. So I really appreciate everyone who's taken part. So let's move on. You picked out, what do we have? A couple of ApplyWire entries here. And then we also have one DecisionWire entry, as you alluded to earlier. So let's dive in and talk about Wiretap's candidate number one. So this person wants to start this fall, 2020, and they're applying to UC Irvine, UCLA Anderson, and USC Marshall. So three Southern California schools. This person has been working in kind of engineering, project management, operations, and is hoping to maybe move into consulting or automotive, and they have a lot of kind of potential places to land post MBA, but they listed a host of consulting firms like Deloitte, KPMG, McKinsey, and some automotive companies like Mazda and Honda. So GMAT score 710, GPA 3.25, years of work experience, drum roll, 12. And this person's in California and wants to stay in Southern California long term. And they noted in their comment that they realize they are a better, kind of executive MBA or, kind of, part-time MBA candidate than they are full-time. But they just lost their job in a corporate restructuring. And so they're kind of thinking this is a chance to pivot. They've been working in kind of the paper industry, and they want to really pivot and also build in the ability to stay in Southern California, where they're currently located. And they mentioned that that economy is a different economy. It's a very tech-phased, tech-based, et cetera. So you had some interaction with this candidate, and I just was curious, yeah, what do you think? I mean, I chimed in too when they posted, but what do you make of this older kind of candidate looking to get into B school for this fall in a late round?
Yeah, I mean, frankly, if this candidate come across the ApplyWire last season, it would have been, it's going to be very, very tough. Schools just very stingy in the last rounds in terms of openings and so on and so forth. But, this is a whole new world right now in terms of, what happens in the later rounds. So it is, frankly, an opportunity for this candidate. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, both Anderson and Marshall, and I'm not sure about Mirage, it could be the same with Mirage too, but they've pushed back their deadlines. So there's more opportunity and more time to prepare outstanding application for this person. So this person's based in LA. As you mentioned, has gone through some corporate restructuring, had an opportunity with the company to go elsewhere, but wants to stay in the LA area. principally, obviously, because of family and kids and so on and so forth. So absolutely understandable, and is going to use the full-time MBA experience in order to pivot and get into consulting, potentially automotive consulting and so on and so forth, which I think the candidate can make a really good and powerful case for. I think, yeah, the application needs to be a sort of nice combination of a good degree of transparency in terms of the current situation and why this application is appearing late in the cycle. And, you know, frankly, I think, you know, rather than trying to sort of, you know, fluff his way through that, just be very frank, be very open and be very honest, but also then really drive home what the value of the MBA will provide going forward. And then the big piece of advice that I offered up on ApplyWire sort of directly is, as an older candidate, as a candidate with family and kids and so forth, as an ADCOM, I'd wonder how engaged would this candidate truly be in the academic life, in the sort of extracurricular life and so on and so forth in our program, or would they just be showing up, get the classes, get the degree and move on. So, but the candidate fully understands that issue, or at least recognizes it and recognizes to make sure that they overcome that particular perception. I think the numbers are decent. Engineering, I mean, obviously a little slightly lower than average for the very top schools, 3.25, but you know, that combination with the 7.10, I think, clearly within range of these programs. I think it'll be down to execution, but you know, I wish this candidate best of luck, Graham. And I think this year it's obviously going to be a lot more possible than it would have been even just 12 months ago.
Yeah, good points. I think on the one hand, I'm really torn with this candidate, because on the one hand, I'm like, hey, you know, he's local to these schools, and this might be the best year ever to be local and late in it, because yes, you know that these schools are likely to be dealing with some international candidates that they've accepted who may not be able to come because of, you know, consulates closed for visas, and even just travel bans, right? So this is a good year to be late. On the other hand, you know, as you said, like if this guy had stumbled onto the site a year ago, round three, and said, look, I'm 34, want to do a full-time MBA, and, you know, targeting maybe McKinsey, but 7.10, 3.25, I'm thinking, you know, sure, that's maybe... it's not like he's applying to Harvard or Stanford, but, you know, I think those numbers are sort of just somewhat pedestrian for a UCLA, and maybe even USC. So it's, I'm kind of on the fence. I think, at minimum, I liked the story he told in the notes, and I think he could make a compelling case. He has a real personal reason for wanting to do this, and I think he's right. Like, I think a full-time MBA would be transformative for him and really help him. Like, I think it would be more effective than some sort of part-time or executive program. So I don't know. I say roll the dice, go for it. It's you know, as I said, this is the year. So give it a shot. And if he can address the concerns that we've kind of addressed, that we've mentioned here, that should go a long way.
Yeah.
So I'm rooting for this guy, definitely.
and one of those areas also is, with 12 years of experience and going to get the full-time MBA, make sure those goals are well developed and focused. It's at this stage, you don't want to come across as someone that's looking at two or three different areas and is going to sort of wander around and explore some stuff. You should really know what you want to do, and how this MBA is going to enable you to do that at this stage of your career. And I know that's easy to say to a candidate that perhaps has only been thinking about this for the last month or two, because, you know, two or three months ago they were in their job and role and everything was fine. But nevertheless, the ADCOM is going to expect that.
Yeah, so just one final thing before we move on. On that note, you know, he mentioned an interest in automotive and maybe getting into consulting to kind of focus on that. And that's fine. I guess my main thing was, you're right, like with 12 years of experience, what has this guy seen that he can carry into a new industry? So, yeah, that I would just really want to make sure that's kind of nailed down, because it, you know, I would perfectly understand an application to business school where the person's like, look, I've worked in kind of oil and gas, paper, you know, these kind of traditional fields, and I want to make a pivot into tech, but using all this operations experience I have to help a tech company do A, B, or C, or, you know, to work in automotive, but in this aspect of it or something. So I just want to make sure that, you know, that he's got that nailed down, as you say.
Yeah.
Anyway, great post. Really happy to see that person sharing their story. I think a lot of people are dealing with kind of potential maybe unemployment now, and, you know, there've been layoffs and things. And so I think it could be a useful profile for us to have discussed here. So let's move along and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person is also looking to start in the fall. So we got a bunch of last minute folks kind of showing up on the site, applying to Michigan, Ohio State, Rochester, and USC Marshall. Pre-MBA career has been kind of in the automotive division of a household adhesives brand. So it's kind of a very specific thing. They've been doing kind of technical sales, and they want to kind of either stay in auto or get into maybe aerospace post-MBA. And companies they're thinking of are Tesla, Toyota, and they also indicated other. So I don't know what the other is, but they have some ideas, presumably. GMAT score 740, undergraduate GPA 2.67. They've been working for 3 years. They also have pursued and earned a graduate degree in which they had a 3.6. So even though they've been working 3 years, they actually probably are 2 years older than your average, at least a year or two older than your average candidate with 3 years of experience, because they went from undergrad to grad school and then started working. So, and they indicate as such, they mentioned they're 28. This is a Pakistani male who has done all of his work experience in the U.S., but has late last year moved back to Pakistan because of a visa issue, and is kind of awaiting a role in Mexico. That's the company that he was working for is kind of dragging its feet on. And so, yeah, he had this like sort of opportunity to go from the U.S. to Mexico, really cool kind of rotational post. But the visa fell through for the U.S. He was sent back to Pakistan to wait, and it's kind of, he's in limbo. So you had a lot of dialogue with this candidate. Do you want to give a summary or kind of what's your take? How is this guy going to get in? And it's kind of last minute too, like the guy we just discussed.
Yeah, I mean, this one's quite tricky, I think, Graham, because this candidate's obviously at the whim of sort of, you know, getting visas and various other things sorted out. And that's clearly seems to be an issue at this point, because the candidate had a plan to spend the next 2 years in Mexico, which I think is fantastic, right? Pakistani, US experience, Mexico experience, then going to a top tier business school. But that's been nixed, or at least temporarily put on hold. And they've had to wait in Pakistan now for 2 or 3 months, I think, as, you know, clearly things are relatively uncertain for this candidate. So they've thrown their hat in the ring, and they've selected these programs to apply. And I don't think, quite frankly, Graham, that they're being overly ambitious in terms of their school selection. Obviously, Ross is at the top of the pile here. It's a very good school, no doubt. But they've spread the profile of the schools out a little bit in terms of reach and target and safety type stuff. So, you know, at the end of the day, they might well get an opportunity this season with these target programs. Then becomes the problem of getting those visas sorted out in time to actually start. As we know, as you've already mentioned, that visa processing piece of it is in limbo right now for all international students, I suppose, at this point. So that's going to add another wrinkle for this candidate. Obviously, in terms of their overall profile, the undergraduate GPA is the weak point. But I do think they've made up for that in terms of a decent graduate record, and an outstanding, obviously, GMAT score with a 740 GMAT. So I think they've done what they need to do in that regard. They've got 3 years of experience. You could say that's a little bit on the lighter side, but as you mentioned, they're 28. They're at, you know, that's going to be your mean or median age in the MBA program, or maybe even a year older. So they're at that point now. I do feel for this candidate, Graham, because they're just kind of at the whim of you know, that sort of being able to move around at this point, and that's going to be their biggest piece of uncertainty, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So on the one hand, you know, you look at a 267 and you say, oh God, you know, they're not going to get into a top school. But as you said, they have a good balance of school type on their list. And that grad school GPA of 3.6 in mechanical engineering and aerospace, like that says a lot. And so I feel like GMAT plus grad school GPA is good. The fact that all their work experience has been in the USA is also, I think, really valuable. It just helps in terms of them being a business school, kind of viewing this candidate as being employable in the States. It's not someone who's just sort of like randomly coming to the US from a foreign market and hoping to land there and stick. This person's like done it, right? So that's good. I personally love the automotive niche. You know, like I think it's a good one. And that's, I presume, why, you know, they have Ross on the list. They want to be kind of near some of the US automotive. I did wonder, like, I kind of wondered if they should look at, I think there are a couple of auto manufacturers that do production, US production in, I want to say, in like North or South Carolina or Georgia. So that made me start wondering, like, should UNC be on this list or Emory or something? But, this candidate would probably be smart to do some digging around, like, which business schools are actually sending people into the auto sector. Because, you know, I know that they have, I think it was Toyota and Tesla on their list, but, you know, there are other companies too. And so I just think that that's a good niche for them to play up. And yeah, so we'll see how it goes. But I feel like they need to address the undergraduate, and they seemed a little wary of doing so. They seemed like they felt like, oh, if I write an essay about how I didn't do well in undergrad because I was a bit overwhelmed and had done so well in high school and it was a really challenging degree program back in Pakistan, I think they need to say that. They just need to say, look, I was a straight A student in high school and was quickly overwhelmed when I landed at one of the best universities in Pakistan to study a very challenging major. It took me some time, but I gradually gained footing, upward trend in my GPA. And I think that my grad school performance is more indicative of my academic capacity and the GMAT score as well. So, you know, obviously hope the committee can look at those items for evidence, you know, of my academic skill. That would be my approach if I was this candidate. I would just have a very simple, you know, paragraph or two explaining this and then move on from it. And obviously they do have to talk about this gap in employment or whatever you want to call it. They're kind of in limbo waiting to be placed in Mexico. And so that might be challenging. Do you have any advice on like what would they say about that? Because it does sound like they're actively waiting to maybe get sent to Mexico, but they're less confident that it'll happen.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that, yeah, so what would you do?
I mean, I asked them directly that question, what are they currently doing? And in the least of it, do some volunteer work. I mean, get involved, get engaged whilst they're waiting for this next move to happen. And they responded, and I think they are doing a little bit of that also. What I would throw back to you, Graham, let's say they got an offer in this late stage, round three, from one of these programs, and concurrently their visas came through and they had the opportunity to go to Mexico for their two-year rotational program as a product manager. Which option should they take?
Well, which business school did they get into?
I mean, let's say Ross. They got into Ross, but they also have an opportunity to go to Mexico.
Yeah, I would go to Ross. They're 28. Go get the MBA. Ross is a great MBA program, actually quite strong in like operations. The automotive stuff is probably great given their location. So I would go to Ross in a heartbeat, get it done, be out by the time they're 30 or so, and on to the next step of their career. I think it's a little more of a gray area if they get into a school that's maybe lesser known or, you know, but they do have this issue with the 267 that, you know, you just never know whether they would overcome it with some of the top schools. So this is a tough call. I do think getting the MBA, most of these schools are good schools, and getting MBA, you know, makes sense. I will say if they're asked about this gap and how they've spent their time, I don't know that I would say, well, I spent the first month or two prepping for the GMAT, because I know that's what they mentioned that to us.
Yeah.
And I think that's never a really good idea, because the quick answer, the thing that goes through the admissions officer's head is, okay, so most people take the GMAT while juggling an incredibly demanding full-time job, and you didn't have to do that. So, you know, like, why is that the case? Why couldn't you have been doing something in addition? So I wouldn't it's just never a good idea to sort of say, well, I took time off to apply to business school kind of thing.
It's a tough situation. I can't say I have any empathy for this type of situation, but I got to say it's got to be very difficult. When I say I don't have any empathy, I wouldn't understand it myself because I haven't had to deal with it.
See what you mean. I thought you were saying you didn't care.
No, I mean, I just think it must be awful, being completely restricted in terms of where you can go, and it's really putting your career on hold at a pretty pivotal moment in your sort of career trajectory, right?
Right.
You've sort of 2 or 3 years out of academics, you're on a roll, you've been doing very well, and now all of a sudden you've had the rug pulled from underneath you and you're kind of stranded. And I think that it's got to be a pretty stressful time. So I really do wish this candidate the best of luck. Hopefully things will start to work out for them and they do get a good pathway going forward. They're clearly smart. Obviously, they've got the wrinkle of the undergrad to overcome, but the grad work and the GMAT and so on and so forth, it looks like they've done good work experience, like you say, in the US for 3 years. They had an opportunity to go to Mexico for a couple of year rotation program. Would have been fantastic. I really hope that they can recover and really get on a great track.
Yeah, agreed. So anyway, I think both of these ApplyWire entries that we review as part of Wiretaps today are people who, you know, you could say had the rug pulled out from under them a bit on the employment side of things. And I think, as I alluded to earlier, this might continue to happen because of the, you know, recession and everything that the pandemic is kind of causing. So, so in any event, I think these are instructive. You always want to account for gaps in employment. You want to be honest and you need to have a kind of very clear sort of career plan and plan to get into school. And again, this year is not a bad time to be applying late. So would love it if these folks would post back on their ApplyWire entries with results and how everything turned out. It'd be great for us to be able to share that with our audience, but also just for us to know like how this all worked out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So moving right along, let's talk about Wiretaps candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire entry from someone who wants to start school this fall, and they have been admitted to Haas with $80,000 scholarship, Chicago Booth with also $80,000, Columbia Business School offered them $100,000 scholarship, and Kellogg at Northwestern $80,000 scholarship. And the person applied to obviously all the schools I just mentioned, but they also did apply to MIT and Stanford, where I presume they did not get in. They want to work in technology after business school. GMAT score, a whopping 770, and GPA, a 3.96. So this is a pretty impressive academically candidate. They're located in the States, and they indicated that they have narrowed this down. So they are choosing between Haas, Booth, and Kellogg, which, as you may recall, it's the same money from all three schools, $80,000 scholarship. And they mentioned that, you know, all these schools place a fair amount of students into tech. This person's coming from consulting, and they want to explore smaller tech firm jobs, but they're not opposed to big tech. And they indicated that Haas seems to afford better opportunities, but Booth and Kellogg are typically ranked higher. So they're wondering, like, do the rankings matter here? How important is being in the Bay Area? You know, so lots of questions, and you and Elliot and others on the site all chimed in. But what's your take? Where should this person go, or what do you make of the way they're kind of deciding here?
I have no idea. I mean, this is, to me, quite honestly, this is, you know, I'm not saying a hunch play in terms of where you end up or whatever. But I mean, on the face of it, you'd be looking. You've got Haas, Booth, Columbia and Kellogg. They've dismissed Columbia, which I think is a little bit odd, actually, quite honestly, because I think being in New York City, you probably do have access to small tech firms in terms of sort of engaging during your MBA, maybe some in-semester internship type stuff going on in New York City and so forth. But in any event, they've decided that Columbia is not in the picture. But you weigh Booth and Kellogg versus Haas. Typically, we would qualify Booth and Kellogg in a tier slightly above Haas, and in a very general sense, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, regardless of the sort of career you're looking for. But then when you start bringing this idea of tech into the equation, Haas starts to emerge a little bit more, because obviously that's a big focus for Haas. And then the candidate wants to explore options at smaller tech firms. So you start to think, well, is that Silicon Valley sort of more entrepreneurial, creative tech startup ecosystem? Does that then put Haas sort of in front or at least at par with Booth and Kellogg? Because, you know, frankly, proximity is going to be very helpful when you're engaging with small tech firms that aren't going to send recruiters halfway across the country to do a whole boatload of interviews, right? So if you're looking at big tech, they're going to have a presence on campus at all the top schools, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. But small tech, I think, Graham's a little bit of a different story, right?
Yeah, it's challenging. I mean, so on the one hand, what I would say, and the data that we see on our site in terms of where people choose to go would suggest that, you know, you have this group that's what we call and others call the M7, right, with Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, Chicago, Kellogg, MIT, Columbia, right? So that's like this commonly accepted group of like the very best business schools. But as we know from looking at the data, Haas is kind of knocking on the door of that group and has been increasingly so. And I attribute a lot of that to, I mean, it's a great program. They have new facilities, but also they're in a location that is so vital to, you know, a lot of kind of job growth and interest in, you know, kind of in the applicant pool amongst, you know, kind of tech stuff. So I think it's tricky. I mean, the money doesn't really tell us much. I do agree that, wow, you know, it's funny they just dismissed Columbia out of hand because there is a lot of tech stuff in New York. But I also would argue that, you know, Columbia is an urban business school in a way that the others are not. I know that, you know, you could say, whoa, Haas is in San Francisco, but really it's in Berkeley. Booth and Kellogg are not like in the hustle bustle of a downtown city, you know, the way that maybe Columbia is. So maybe they have a kind of personal preference there. I think my big issue was, how much does small tech hire straight out of business school? Like, so what's that marketplace like? I don't purport to have the answer there, but I did wonder, you know, you're graduating from business school. Is the general inclination for people to just go to the big names because those are the firms that are hiring in quantity and can also pay the salaries that MBAs often demand?
Right.
So I think to get one of these small tech jobs is going to require a lot of networking and you know, presumably not a ton of money in terms of a starting salary, at least not in the way that, you know, Amazon's going to compensate an MBA they hire or something. So it's tricky. I'd need to know more about this candidate and how willing are they to, like, yeah, do the kind of the meet and greet across the Bay Area to find a small tech company that'll hire them, and they're going to have to take a lot of stock options and set a salary maybe or something. Like, it just depends. I mean, obviously there's some small tech that are venture backed and can afford to drop, you know, $100,000+ a year on an MBA grad, but so it's tricky. I mean, I do understand where their leanings are kind of coming from. It's tough. I mean, I think Kellogg's the one that jumps out to me too, because they have such a great campus and new facility, and they seem to be kind of moving their way back up into the mix of the, you know, kind of towards the of that bunch of like MIT and Chicago. So it's tricky. So I'm gonna, you know, this is really up to them, and I don't really have a definitive answer here.
No, and it's, you know, the community that's weighed in. We've a few other candidates have weighed in, and you know. That, you know, one candidate makes a very compelling case for Haas, then another candidate makes a compelling case for one of the others. So it's a very interesting conversation. The candidate appears to be leaning toward Haas at this point, but is planning to talk to more second year students. And I think that's the right thing to do. Keep pushing, keep quizzing people. And then once you've made the decision, don't look back.
Yeah.
It'll be a great decision and you'll have a fantastic time.
Yeah, they're not going to go wrong with one of these decisions.
No. Absolutely not.
Somebody gave them the advice, and now I think, you know, maybe Berkeley's going to be annoyed with us, but somebody gave them the advice that they should go, they should ring up the Haas admissions office and say, gee, I got $100,000 at Columbia, and I'm really, you know, I'd love to come to Haas, but money's really important, and, you know, that they should negotiate or attempt it. And I think, obviously, it's good advice, but it's just interesting to hear what people are saying. And yeah, there's not an obvious choice here, and I think, you know, they can't go wrong, as you say, and they shouldn't look back.
Yeah.
That reminds me, though, we did put up an admissions tip the other day about negotiating scholarships. And I don't know if everyone saw that, but if you are someone with offers and you're trying to decide and you've got, you know, different amounts of money from different schools and maybe not the most money from the school you want to attend, definitely read our admissions tip. There's an admissions tips master page on the Clear Admit website, and there's a really good, we have these kind of five steps or five components of a successful kind of negotiation strategy for scholarships. So check that out. It could be really useful. I also, Alex, before we kind of wrap up today, I was kind of lamenting the fact that no one is reading our five tips for welcome weekend attendance this year, because that's usually a really popular admissions tip as people head off to these admitted student events. But alas, you know, it's not as relevant this year, although I think some of the advice in there is actually good in terms of what people should be doing, whether they're going to a welcome event or not, in terms of, you know, connecting with future classmates, coming in with questions, and, you know, not getting too wowed by some of the glitter and glam that, you know, even these virtual events are going to have. You know, they're going to roll out their best professor to teach you a virtual class. The dean's going to welcome you and make you feel special. But don't forget, if you have questions to ask, ask those hard questions. Check in with people who've also been admitted to that school, see what people are thinking, and, you know, try to do some of that networking in a virtual way, and use DecisionWire or wherever you can on the web. So in any event, that's kind of the episode, I think, Alex, unless you had anything else that you wanted to add today.
No, just everybody stay safe. We're still obviously navigating through this wretched environment in which we're in. So yeah, everyone stay safe, and best of luck, everybody.
Yeah, definitely stay healthy, everyone. And hopefully this podcast provides a little bit of a kind of a nice distraction, you know, during these times that we're all kind of, many of us at least, are confined at home and stuff. So hang in there, everybody. Stay safe. And we'll be back in 1 week's time with another edition of Wiretaps.
Yep. Good luck, everyone.